Blog Talk Radio.
Om Shabbat Shalom, holy way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, holy way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. And I am the light within your soul. In the essence of truth and right, love makes the circle whole. And here we stand in line, waiting for some sacred sign. But to find the balance is the purpose of this time. To restore the balance of the universal mind. And in the presence of my Lord of light and love, everything I see aspiring to be free. And when I call to thee and come on bended knee, surrender to the all-pervading light and love. Reflections of the one surrounding me with love. And I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. Within and without, above and below, yeah. East, west, north and south, I sense your presence. Without and within, below and above, yeah, yeah. East, west, north and south, I sense your presence. I sense your presence. Presence of my Lord of light and love, everything I find in tune with the divine. And here we stand in line, waiting for some sacred sign. But to find the balance is the purpose of this time. To restore the balance of the universe. Universal mind. And I am the light within your soul. In the essence of truth and right, love makes the circle whole. And when I call to thee and come on bended knee, surrender to the all-pervading light and love. Reflections of the one surrounding me with love. For to find the balance is the purpose of this time. To restore the balance of the universal mind. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, holy way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, holy way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, holy way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom. angel of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. I sense your presence.
Thank you for joining me here tonight on Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. My name is Jessie Ann Nichols George, and I'm your hostess this evening. The music you were listening to there at the beginning of the show is I Sense Your Presence. It's by Shem Shai, great group that I met in the Sedona, Arizona area several years back, and they're traveling the world, living their dream, of course, having a great life. And I want to extend a welcome, whether you are returning because you've listened to the show before, or whether this is your first time listening. We are now streaming live in three additional places, TalkStream Live, StreamFinder, and PEN, also known as Prayer Encounters Network, and I welcome everyone listening through there as well. You might hear a little fireworks going off there in the background. It just got dark where I am, and so we have a few fireworks going off tonight, so we might hear that occasionally during the show as well. And of course, you might hear a little meow here every now and then. I have my co-host Orly with me, which those that have been listening in know that Orly is a little kitty that I rescued about 3 weeks ago, pushing almost 4 weeks, but 3.5 weeks ago off of a creek bed. She was just about ready to go over a waterfall when I called out to her, and she came back to me and decided she would join me here in this life for a while. Here at Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour, I look at the different ways that compassion exists in our lives, how to remove our blocks, resistances, frustrations, and more. Some weeks I'll be discussing different aspects of how compassion is in our life, how it affects our life, and the different areas of compassion. And then sometimes we're doing different exercises or practical implementations. And many times, just like tonight, I have a lot of wonderful guests on the show so that you can learn about how their work and how other things complement and work with compassion. In addition to that, I'll highlight different musical artists along the way, Stephen Halpern, Peter Cater, Claire Hedin, Jill Mattson. They were all on last year. Actually, Claire was on right at the end of 2012. And then also Bruce Ciccarelli, who was just on a couple of weeks ago. And you can catch all those shows in the archives, by the way. In my own work, I focus on helping people find and use compassion in their everyday lives. I've created the Genesis Clearing Statement, and if you've missed that, you can catch it in our archives. I've authored 4 books, the most recent being You, Me, Life Dreams, and its companion workbook, which are based on relationships and the different roles and things we take in relationships and the masculine-feminine dynamics. And then my first 2 books, Activating Compassion and its companion workbook. In addition, I've created the Compassion Tour, a multi-state nationwide tour, including workshops, retreats, seminars, book signings, and fundraising events. And you can follow all the live events that you can register for through my event site, which is Jessie Ann Nichols George, that's my full name, .eventbrite.com. And just a reminder, if you enjoy the show this evening, make certain that you tell your friends and your family and all those other people you're connected with out there, because, you know, I always find when I'm sharing something that it ends up being exactly what somebody needed to know about and exactly what was going to help them right then. And you never know whose life you're going to change because of just clicking the share button. They can always catch it in our archives, and those are available immediately after the show. And they can use the same link to come in that you use to come into the show and listen to it at their convenience. They can also find those archive links on my website. They'll be on my page of the Main Street Universe tab at jessieannicholsgeorge1.com. So that's my full name, the1.com. In addition to that, they'll have the opportunity to listen to it as a podcast through iTunes, TuneIn.com, and also there will be a YouTube version available for that as well. Now, before we get started on everything, those that have listened to the show before know that I love to delve into a book by Yehuda Berg. It's called The 72 Names of God, and I love Yehuda's work because he takes the big concepts and he breaks it down into everyday life, everyday terms, and I think that that's great for us in order to connect with it and to connect with these different pieces that bring us together and help us grow. So looking on tonight's message, and this message, by the way, is available on my page of the Main Street Universe tab on my website, and it's available right after the show as well. And tonight's name for God that we have from Yehuda is Dialing God. And his message here is, are you constantly getting a busy signal when you pray? Is there too much static on the line? Are you constantly getting cut off each time you dial up? Is it hard to get an outside line? And the insight he provides on this is, the light is always there, never changing, forever willing and able to fulfill our every desire, to answer our every prayer. Just like the electricity in our homes, it is ever present, but we must plug into it in order to physically receive its many benefits. There are many negative forces that attempt to block and impede our prayers as they travel the spiritual network. We create these negative forces with our own negative behavior and unkind words. In the same way as freezing rain and ice can down a power line, our cold and bitter behavior breaks down the lines of communication to the source of all blessings. This name clears all obstructions, provided we acknowledge that we alone are responsible for getting our prayers answered. It repairs broken lines, removes interference, and establishes a secure line of communication to the upper world. The meditation he provides on this is, you dial, you connect, your prayers are answered at the speed of light. And again, the common name is Dialing God, but the formal name is pronounced Lamed Vav Vav. Okay, again, that's Lamed Vav Vav. And again, you can catch that on my page of the Main Street Universe tab on my website. And you can go back and look at that all throughout the week if you want to refresh your mind on it and just ponder on that and meditate with it. So a little something here for us to think about before we head off on break and get our guest on for this evening. Now, what does inner freedom feel like for you? What blocks do you feel stand in the way of having inner freedom? What is inner freedom really about? Now, for many, this concept is a mere aspect of being okay with oneself, or not being swayed by outside influences, or knowing who you are and staying true to that. Buddhist thought may say it is freedom from attachments. Others will simply call it their happy place. I think most people have a concept of what this would be like for them. The irony in this being that for most, that is about material peace, financial ease, and yet they associate it with an inner feeling. For many, they place the inner feeling as dependent on an outer earthly material source. Another large group looks at it from a much more Zen approach, being able to be peaceful, quiet, have stillness, let go of mental processes. I, however, am interested with the additional dimensions brought in by Lorraine Flaherty, who specializes in inner freedom work. While she mentions some of the basics of being empowered and boosting self-esteem, she also brings in the components of future life progression, inner child, and ancestral healing. For me, this seems to be a bit more encompassing than the normal aspects of inner freedom, as it includes the dimensions of both the outer and inner worlds. It accounts for the influences of others and situations on our personal empowerment. Now, when I consider this aspect, I come back with, yeah, sure, but we still have choice in what we feel and think, and of this, I'm a strong believer. Yet no matter how spiritually evolved we are still in a human existence. As long as we reside in a human existence, there will be interaction with our environment and all that is in it, which means others and situations. Like it or not, there are other aspects that we are interrelating to. As we look at the inner child and ancestral aspects, we are able to understand the interaction with our world on multiple levels. For these areas, in my opinion, often carry the coding and programming of our experiences. It is these aspects that continue to guide, alert, awaken us, and cry out when things are out of balance. On one hand, we are simply only dealing with ourselves. Yet on the other, there are many facets of ourselves and the coding that has been passed down to us ancestrally. These facets often hold both the tools and the challenges that we have to work with. When did you last spend time working with your inner child, and what did it have to share with you? What ancestral aspects are you working with? And how have these aspects influenced your own personal empowerment? This week, our guest focuses on a component of compassion that is related to the aspect in my books of the hidden enemy. This reminds us that judgments can surface in many shapes and forms, that they can come from and at us, and can even be patterns set up in our childhood or through ancestral energy. I'm going to take a short break, and when we return, I will have Lorraine Flaherty with us, and she is going to be sharing her work in inner freedom, child and ancestral aspects, and future life progressions. And the song that I have for you during our break is called Euphorians. It's by Claire Hedin. And if you'd like to find out more about Claire's work, matter of fact, I just got to spend some time with her about a week or so ago, enjoying lunch and everything like that. But she's a wonderful, wonderful person. And you can learn more about her work and her songs and things that are available through her website, which is www.clairehedin.com. And that's CLAREHEDIN.com. We'll be back shortly. Welcome back. You are listening to Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour, and my name is Jessie Ann Nipples George, and I'm your hostess this evening. And that song that you were just listening to is called Euphorians. It's by Claire Hedin. And again, you can check out more of her work at www.clairehedin.com. That's clarehedin.com. And again, I will be bringing on one of my chatters, actually, and somebody in the chat room was just mentioning that that was really different than what they had heard before. And if those of you have been listening to the show for a while, you're going to be pleased to know I'm going to bring on several more songs that you have never heard before by Claire Hedin. So you'll have that to look forward to in upcoming weeks. And I'd like to bring my guest on tonight, Lorraine Flaherty. She's a transformational therapist who uses the tools of hypnotherapy, NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming, past life therapy, future life progression, life between lives, inner child work, and spirit release therapy. She has helped thousands to overcome their fears and reach their full potential, including stars of radio, TV, music, and film. Lorraine has an advanced clinical hypnosis diploma and teaches accelerated learning skills and communication skills to medical students, dentists, and midwives in universities, including Oxford and Cambridge. After Lorraine completed her NLP training, she spent 7 years assisting Paul McKinn and Richard Bandler, who are the co-creators of NLP, to teach NLP, and she does success coaching, and weight loss, and she has completed a diploma in regression therapy, a certificate in life between lives, and a Train the Trainers hypnosis training course with the Regression Academy. Lorraine trained with Ann Gersh in future life progression and is now a director of the Past and Future Life Society. She runs workshops and works as a corporate coach, has authored Healing with Past Life Therapy, Transformational Journeys Through Time and Space, and has also released 2 CDs called The Inner Freedom 1 and Inner Freedom 2. We will be looking tonight at the various modalities that she is working with, and you can learn more about her work, by the way, at www.innerjourneys.co.uk. So lots of information there. I'm looking forward to delving into this tonight. And Lorraine, welcome to Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
And I know it's not midnight where you are, but it is it is for us here in this state. So it's such a pleasure to have you sharing your time with us and coming on the show. And I'd really love for you to start off with sharing, I shared a little bit about kind of your profile, your business profile, so to say, but a little bit more about you and how you got into doing this work.
Yes, well, the journey started many, many years ago because I, in the work that I do, I explore the space where we are before we come into this life, and I chose to come into an Irish Catholic family because it was going to provide me with all kinds of interesting challenges, and I was born with a very inquisitive nature and somebody that didn't believe everything that I was told and not somebody that could do things on blind faith, which is very much what the teachings were. So my sort of opening to being a part of a universe that was based on what I believe to be love, not fear, was constantly challenged because I was taught in those early years that God was this benevolent, loving being who was our father and would take care of us. But I was also taught that if we did things wrong or didn't obey the rules that the church had put out there, that I was going to be punished and I was going to be sent to hell forever to live in eternal damnation. And that really didn't sit right with me, even as a very, very young child. So I challenged everything. I challenged the priests and the teachers and even my parents, God bless them, who I challenged many, many times on things. And, of course, nobody had answers for me. They couldn't really explain what these things meant. So I went on my own search at a really young age, exploring all the different religions of the world, exploring spirituality, and trying to make greater sense of who we were and why we were here and what all of this meant. And along the way, I discovered that there were many ways of exploring, mainly through the kind of esoteric sides of religions, that led to answers that we could find within ourselves and a deeper connection to God and the universe. And of course, when I explored most of those sort of very early versions of religions and the spiritual versions, they all confirmed that the universe was a place that was based on love, and that this idea, this concept that we have of a higher power is based on love. But many of these religions or groups kind of demanded that you become an initiate, that you sign up, that you follow their particular pathway, and through that you could get to that knowledge, that awareness within yourself. And I wasn't really comfortable to do that, because I'm not somebody that's very good at being told what to do, and I didn't want to follow one path in particular. And they all alluded to meditation being a key, which I struggled with in my earlier years, because it was very difficult to shut the busy mind off. So I spent many, many years looking for answers, looking for things that would help me to come back to that place of truth within myself, the connection to the divine. And through many courses, through many studies, I travelled the world working with many different teachers. And it was only around the year 2000 that I ended up, through a series of synchronicities, doing an NLP training course. And the first day we were there, we were taught a very simple hypnosis exercise. And it was one of those real epiphany moments. It was a real eureka moment, because the moment I started working with the hypnosis and putting somebody into the trance state, which gave us access to the subconscious realm, gave us access to information that's deeply embedded within each person, I knew that was the answer. I knew that was the key. And so from that point onwards, I devoted, well, certainly the next 2-3 years to the study, to learning everything I could about hypnosis and about this ability to explore within the subconscious and find answers, and have been very passionate about it ever since.
And, you know, it's interesting that you bring up that conflicting aspect with the church, because I think a lot of people out there have experienced that very same thing, and they can relate to that. Raised in a church, whatever that church may have been, a Christian or Presbyterian or Catholic or Lutheran or whatever it is, and noticing that conflict, like there's something that's not connecting for me here. How can mm-hmm. I, this loving aspect, and be damned at the same time? It does. And I notice a lot of people today, as they've moved on to becoming adults, going, where does this all come together? And as you say, it's been a long journey studying with a lot of different people and finding that piece that resonates for you. And I think that that's a very big message, is that we don't have to accept what is fed for us, you know, fed to us, and we can move forward and explore and find those pieces that provide us with the foundations that work for us, which is what you did here.
Absolutely. As I said, I think I came in with a very inquisitive nature, so the desire to find the truth of who we are and why we're here, I always felt that there was a reason why I was here, and I always felt as though there was something that I was supposed to do. And I think a lot of people that are now starting to wake up, to find themselves on the spiritual path, I think they have that sense, that awareness. And it was a real challenge growing up, because the people around me really didn't understand my search. They really didn't understand what this burning desire was within me to find this knowledge. And so growing up, I was kind of perceived as being a bit odd. In fact, I think my nickname growing up at school was Weirdo, which I think was, you know, sort of thrown at me almost as an insult. But in many ways, I took it as a great compliment, because I did feel different. I didn't feel the same as everybody else. And I kind of enjoyed that. I didn't really want to conform. There's, a part of me that has felt not necessarily unique, but just as though I wasn't born to fit into the traditional norms of society. So in growing up, when all of my friends were talking about getting married and having children and doing the usual everyday life things that you do, I remember saying really clearly, no, I don't want to do that. I don't think that's why I'm here, that I want to explore and I want to travel the world and I'm going to write books. And that those books that I write are going to be my children. And this was at sort of 10, 11 years old. And I remember my friends all looking at me like I was like I was crazy. But, of course, the truth now is that that's exactly what happened. All of my friends did go on and get married and have children. And I have really done exactly what I said I was going to do. So it's amazing how that knowledge, I think, sits with us. You know, I think we bring in an idea of who we are.
I'm laughing because I was always in that same position. I knew I was different. I couldn't seem to fit in a lot of places. Mm-hmm. And I embraced that, and I was okay. I was happy to be different in a lot of ways. But it didn't really hit me until probably close to those teen years, when I was working on some things with dreams and I started talking about dreams, and I found out that not everybody dreamed in color like it was real life. And I just thought that was totally normal, these types of things. Yeah. And, so I have a very similar path, because it's funny, like you say, I never had that burning desire to go out and have kids, and I was actually just having this conversation with somebody about a week and a half ago, and they're like, I can't believe that you've never, ever wanted to have kids. Mm. And I'm like, I almost considered it with one person, but I always felt like I was here to do something else, and if I had kids, I would have, I would give them everything, but I would not feel like I was doing what I was here to do. And as you say, I think a lot of people are waking up to that today and realizing, I know I'm here for something else. Yes. I know there's something bigger than me.
Yes, and coming from an Irish Catholic family, getting married and having children, it's just the done thing. It's just what you do. So I grew up with people saying to me, oh, you'll change your mind. Oh, you'll get there. Oh, don't worry, you'll get to that point. And I remember looking at them and just saying, no, I won't. And them saying, oh, you will, which is a very Irish thing anyway. No, really, I'm not going to. And, of course, I'm approaching my 50s now, so it's too late now, even if I had changed my mind. So they're all looking at me now and going, oh, you really did mean it, didn't you?
Yes,
I really did. And of course, with the my first book coming out, it was, in some ways, it was a great relief, probably to them and me, because it meant that I had really meant what I said. And it feels like I have left a legacy. So I don't, the Irish Catholic guilt that they put on you, that you didn't leave something behind, I can say to them, look, I did it. Here's the book. So there was a purpose to it. There was a reason for it. I wasn't just being, just avoiding the subject. But I think
go ahead.
So many people nowadays are recognizing that there is more to being here, and that's not to say, because having children is one of the most incredible things that you can do, and I salute and I raise my hand to all of those that go there and do it. But there are, I think, different pathways. And, of course, in the work that I do when I'm exploring other lifetimes and certainly delving into past life experiences, I know that my soul journey so far has quite often been more of a solitary one as a priest or a a healer or a medicine woman. There have been many, many lifetimes where I've chosen to be on the outskirts, to not fit in, and do that traditional life route.
I can completely relate because I have found the same thing for myself, being on the outside for many lifetimes, choosing this path many lifetimes. And it sometimes is hard to explain to other people. Sometimes mm-hmm. they accept it, sometimes they don't. But I think that that's a big message in and of itself, is that we learn to honor our path, whatever that is for you. As you say, I can certainly respect those people who choose to be parents, and it is a whole another important realm to be in, and it's a very valuable piece as is doing the shaman and the priesthood work, and we, you know, all these different things need to be fulfilled. And in my opinion, no one takes, sits higher per se than the others. They all contribute.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was, I'm very blessed. My best friends had twin boys at 13 or 14 years ago. And so I get to be auntie, and that kind of ticked the boxes for that connection to the the youngsters that are coming in who are so extraordinary. I mean, that's the thing that I'm noticing nowadays with children, is that so many of them are coming in with such incredible gifts and so much to contribute. And as you said, had I chosen to be a parent, I know that I would have done it wholeheartedly and would have devoted my time and energy completely into that. And I was very clear that that wasn't the route. But when I do want to go connect, I go spend time with these boys, and they have a great way of drawing out creativity mm-hmm. and fun and play. And I think that it's really important for us to honour the child aspect within, which is why a lot of my work now is based on that. It's based on helping people to heal and access that part within themselves. So even though I never chose the maternal route or to be a mother, I spend a lot of time with people's inner child. I spend a lot of time with children, just not in the way that I thought I was going to.
I understand that. I actually worked with the children's programs for 13 years.
Right.
So I do love children. I love that spirit and that energy. And since we're in this focus of children, let's look at that in relation to your work. Why is this inner child aspect so important for us?
Well, it's key because when we are in our early years, our mind is operating differently to the way it does when we're an adult. I think it was Bruce Lipton in his work in the epigenetics. They've, in their research, recognized that children are still operating at an alpha brainwave level right up to about the age of 5 or 6. And the alpha brainwave is the state that we put people into in hypnosis because they're better able to absorb suggestions. So children really are sponges in those early years. And what they don't have at that time is the ability to rationalize or to sort of critically analyze the things that they're seeing in front of them. So they don't have the ability to decide whether something is right or wrong or good or bad. It just is what it is. So they come into the world with a mission, with a life lesson, something they've chosen to work through. But of course, the act of being born creates amnesia, so they completely forget who they are. They forget why they've come. Some and obviously some of these indigo and crystal children are coming in with more information, more memory of who they are. But on average, there's usually complete amnesia. And then what they do is that they absorb and they learn from the world around them. And what this does is it starts to fill up the memory banks, the mind, which operates like a giant computer. So it's as though they're downloading information onto the hard drive by everything they experience around them. So depending on the beliefs that their parents have or the behaviours or the attitudes, not just parents but peers and other family members. So if they're born into a world where they are told that the world is safe and that they are loved and that, you know, it's safe for them to go and explore and to take chances and that they will be held, they will be supported through whatever they do, then that's going to give them a very grounded perspective of life. Unfortunately, that doesn't always tend to be the case, because with the best will in the world, most parents at times are going to be distracted. They can't devote all of their time and energy to the children. Nowadays people have to go out to work, so children are left with other people. Emotions get raised. Couples don't always get on. And, in moments of temper, they may say things to the child that they may not even mean. Throwaway comments like, oh, don't be stupid, or, don't be an idiot. But of course, to the child's mind, they're just taking that stuff as though it's for real, and it's creating imprints, really, really big imprints, on the hard drive that is the programming part of them. And then as they move through life, that's the reference point for them whenever they're evaluating or deciding how they should respond, how they should behave in certain situations. So if there is a file running where they were told that they were an idiot or that they were stupid, and they're going into a situation that's new or a little bit uncertain, they have to reference inside the memory banks to say, okay, can I cope with this? Am I able to deal with this? And if the file opens up and says, no, actually, you're an idiot, no, actually, you're really stupid, then, of course, their experience of the world is going to be really limited, because they hold back, and their self-talk, which is generated at that point, becomes more and more negative, and more fears and insecurities come in. And this then has an impact on everything that happens through life, that inner foundation, that core programming, which is just running behind the scenes constantly. So it's really important that people actually go in and start to connect with and to rewrite some of those messages that were picked up in the early years that aren't helpful. And by accessing the subconscious and communicating, by connecting with the inner child, which is usually the part of them that separated off when things didn't feel safe or they didn't feel loved. It's like a little defense mechanism where a part of them will just say, okay, this doesn't feel okay, this doesn't feel safe, so I'm going to put up a shield and I'm just going to create a safe space deep within and I'm just going to stay there. And that's the part that in hypnosis, in the sessions, that we draw out, that we bring to the surface. And by communicating, we can find out what they need. And 9 times out of 10, they just need to be seen. They need to be loved, and they need to know that they deserve to be loved unconditionally. It doesn't matter what they do or who they are or how they perform or how they behave. They just need that acknowledgement that they are worthy and they deserve to be loved no matter what. And this is really integral now to the work that I do.
And this is so very important. I have done some work with going in and picking up memories and rewriting them. And
yeah.
Even in what we often consider so-called good families, well-intentioned parents, parents that try to do their best, this sort of thing, these tapes of judgment show up, and these tapes are there. And we don't even realize it a lot of times, and then we hit these blocks and we hit these obstacles along the way, and it's like, I don't even know why I'm feeling this way. I don't even know why I'm afraid of this. And if we start to reflect back and get in touch with this inner child, we realize, oh, yeah, you know, Mom and Dad used to always say, oh, you don't associate with those people, or that's not the right thing, or, you know, it can be very subtle things sometimes. It doesn't always even have to be as blatant as you're stupid or mm-hmm. what's wrong with you or these things. And we put these things out so inadvertently without even thinking about it, as whether we're parents or not.
Absolutely, absolutely. And part of the thing that I've also realized now is that it also goes so much deeper, because it's not just the programming that we are absorbing as a child, but we're also carrying energy in our DNA, which is connected to our ancestors. And these inner programs, I mean, these are deeply, deeply embedded into the core of our being. You know, our cells are holographic, and they contain data and information about who we are, our essence. But our ancestors and their messages and their beliefs and ideas are also embedded into that. And so now when I'm doing the inner child work, it's not enough just to deal with the healing those sort of external messages that came in, but it's also really important for them to understand where that came from. So I guide people back to the discovery of where those messages came from. And as you said, the judgments and the beliefs and the ideas that are carried through. So we go back and we explore the childhood of the parents to see what it was that happened to them when they were younger, to provide them with the beliefs that they've been imparting, good and bad. Again, it's, you know, there are often many gifts that we receive as well as the negative stuff. But then I backtrack it all the way back to the early ancestors. So we look at grandparents, and then we go right back. And what I'm seeing time and time again is that, you know, in early times, and sometimes they'll go back to the 15th century, sometimes they'll go all the way back to prehistoric times, to an ancestor who was so caught up in the idea of survival and trying to provide that there wasn't time left for connection and for love. And they were operating from a fear-based survival, which, of course, keeps us caught in that kind of almost fight-flight loop. And there's a disconnect then between the family members. So even though the intentions were good, you know, children in these environments sensed energetically, they felt as though they weren't being honoured or they weren't being taken care of. And often, in some cases, they really weren't. And particularly, you know, I go back through my ancestral line, which I have an Irish heritage, and, you know, there were lots of times when there were famine and there wasn't enough to eat, and there was real fear, sort of deeply, deeply embedded. And it's really important to go back and clear that too. And it's so powerful, it's so moving when we actually go back and communicate with those early ancestors and re-educate them about the importance of loving one another and being there, and that when we take time to support one another and to cooperate, co-create, to be there for each other, that things change, that the fear lessens, that support network that is created as a family, it kind of lifts that fear when we bring everything back to the vibration of love. And of course, that energetically, it sort of frees up not only the ancestors, but it means that the future generations of families are no longer caught up in the cycle and can then do things differently. So it kind of breaks the chains. And time and time again, I've seen this where people acknowledge and they realize that if they hadn't changed that, then they would have imparted that same message that they're carrying, whether, you know, life is scary or there isn't enough or they're not good enough or whatever the message may have been, they would inadvertently have passed that on to their children if they hadn't made this change in the now. So it's so important.
I agree. The ancestral work is very critical, and I think I've been clearing a lot of ancestral work this lifetime. I'll tell you, it's And we see this sometimes with those of us that choose not to have children, bringing an end to ancestral patterns that are there. And you threw out some terms and some concepts that I'm going to come back to here. But I really love that you brought up this aspect that, you know, where we don't always maybe know where fear is coming from, but it's been embedded by an ancestor who was trying to survive, and how that disconnects us. I think that that's a really big piece, because we don't realize we've shut down, or we don't remember doing these shutting downs, and yet it, you know, may have happened from generations back. You mentioned a term about this being holographic, or having a holographic imprint. Could you explain more about that for our listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. So our cells are actually holographic. I mean, each individual cell in the body contains all the information, all the data about us. So our physical, spiritual, mental, emotional, all the data about who we are and where we've been, it's all encoded. So it's there is so much information. And what I see with the work that I do, when we take people into the hypnosis state, you know, my perception is that we're able to unlock the doors that get us access to that information that is held at that cellular level. So it means that we can get access to whether it's the past lives or the future life information or this information about our ancestors. It's all there. It's just it's locked away, because obviously if we had access to all of that information all of the time, it would be overwhelming. But when we have the right key, when we have the right coordinates, and we're, you know, we know what it is that we need to discover, everything we need is already inside. And I find that this is such a huge theme for me, and I guess I knew this when I was younger, because so many people, when they're on this search for truth and they're on this search for knowledge and information, turn outside of themselves. So whether it's to a teacher, or whether it's to a religion, or whether it's to a particular system, and time again I come back to the fact that everything that we need is already inside. It's already there. The answers to all the questions about who we are, why we're here, what's going on with us, you know, whether it's physical healing that needs to happen, whether it's, you know, beliefs that we need to change, whatever that may be, it's embedded. It's already there. And our job really is to just be able to find that time to go inside and unlock that to get access to the information. And it's why meditation and those inner studies have throughout the centuries always been part of that key. They've always been part of that journey. But I know that many people struggle with meditation, because unless you're born and raised in an environment where it's a regular study, it's not easy to shut the inner mind off. It's not easy to stop what we call the chattery monkey mind. So I think many people try to pursue meditation, but because they don't always get it right straight away, they feel like it's not for them, or that they failed, or that they can't do it, and it puts them off. So I know I struggled for many, many years with it. So when I found hypnosis, and being able to use it, which is a very, very similar state to meditation, it's almost identical, but it, a bit like the yin-yang symbol, I see that yin is sort of the passive, still version, where you focus the mind and you allow things to steal, and then insights will emerge. But hypnosis is like the kind of active, the yang version, because you go into a focused state of attention, but you have a mission. You have a question that you have in mind. There's information that you want to find out. So the mind is working with you. It's going with you on the journey. And it's much easier to get the mind to cooperate when you say, look, there's a purpose to this. There is a reason why we're going here. And, you know, and I want you to assist me and help me to find this stuff. And the chattery mind usually goes, well, yeah, that sounds great. Why didn't you say so? Why didn't you say that this is going to be, you know, both interesting, beneficial, that we were going to get something out of this? And it's just made things so much easier, both for me and for the people that I work with. You know, they are now able to get access to that information.
Well, and I think it's very similar to somebody who wants to buy a car. If they go to the car lot and they say, I want to buy a car, you know, or I'm just going to look around the lot and see what jumps out at me, versus going to that car lot and say, you know, I'm looking for a 4x4 that can handle this, that is such and such a color, so it doesn't show the dirt is bad or whatever, then it's very easy to go locate that car. And so I think it's very similar to that. And you mentioned, you know, of course, all of the info is inside. And I get some clients that get very frustrated with me at times because I say, already inside of you. And they're like, I don't know how to get there. I don't know how to access it or things like that. And they're still looking outside of themselves. And I think, and you can add to this or put your insights into this, you know, my experience with this is that, yes, it's all inside of us. Sometimes we will find a teacher that helps connect the dots or turn the light switch on, but we're still the one looking. We're still the one that's seeing what's in the room when that light switch goes on. So these outside sources can maybe be a catalyst for something to be recalled, but it's still always inside of us. And if you never had an outside source to turn to, which I don't know if that's completely possible in a human life because you're always taking in stimulus of one sort or another, you will discover all of that information.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, we, you know, when we're constantly learning and evolving and growing, if somebody else has already walked the path ahead of you, so they know the direction in which to head, then that's very helpful. It's one thing to know that the information is there, but how do you get to it is key. And oftentimes with meditation, people will be able to find it, but sometimes it is easier to just allow somebody to be a guide in the process and lead them to where they go. So I see myself in the work that I do as almost being a bit of a spiritual detective, because, you know, I think that inquisitive nature has served me well in getting access to information. But also I see myself as almost being a bit of a spiritual sat-nav. You know, I'm like the GPS that will guide people along the way, but they're the one driving the car. They're the one that is, you know, getting access to the information. But I can steer them in the right direction and show them where to go. But absolutely, the work I do is all about getting them to go inside and find these answers and find out what their truths really are.
And I think that is key. And when we start to unfold these, then we... It seems like with every session you do with something like this, it can unfold a new insight for you to explore, a new understanding that you might sit and work with for a while. And I like to do that. I'm constantly working. Like if I go to sleep at night, I'll put a thought in my head and say, I'd love to get insight about this area of my life or this particular thing. And it never ceases to amaze me that when I take a look at the messages from my dreams or my astral travels or whatever you want to say, the next morning, it completely has the answers there.
Yeah.
And I do find this work is very valuable that you're talking about, that you work with people on, because so many times when we hit these blocks and we hit these obstacles and we're getting frustrated, that's exactly what we need to do, is to focus in and say, well, where did this come from? Mm-hmm. And amazingly, a lot of people don't stop and go, where did this really come from? Where did I get this program? And how did it get to me? So the holographic thing that you talk about with ancestral aspects, I think, is important because that's a microcosm to our global consciousness and
Absolutely.
How it works.
Yeah, and because, you know, at a soul level, we are all connected anyway. So it's so important. And I think that, you know, we talked earlier about judgment. And again, I think that that's a really key part of this work, because as I'm getting people to go in and explore and find out the reason why they experience challenges and the things that are going on, the adversities that they face. And oftentimes, probably all the time, they're starting to realise now that actually they chose to have those experiences, that this was something that they needed to do on a soul level to evolve, to grow. And so it means that people start to take responsibility. They start to accept that they have chosen this experience. And, of course, what that does is it means that people become more empowered. And instead of looking out to the outside world and saying, well, why has this happened to me? You know, why are people being hurtful to me? Or, you know, why is life being unfair? And it turns the whole thing round, because when people start to say, well, hang on a minute, what am I learning from this? You know, why have I chosen this rather than why is this happening to me? It turns the whole thing round. And often in the past life work, when people see that, you know, they had agreed with other souls to have certain experiences and that people agreed to come and test them and challenge them, then they start to get understanding about why these events are unfolding. And it turns that sort of victim mentality into empowerment, but it also turns it into gratitude for the events and the things that are going on. People start to recognize that the challenges, the adversities are there for a purpose. It's there to help them evolve. And once they get the lesson, then they can move on. So again, that's hugely healing, not just for the person themselves, but also for the people that they've been interacting with, both in this life and in other lifetimes. It means they get to let go of guilt that they've maybe been holding on to about things that they had done, because we see it's all part of the tapestry. It's all meant to be. And it has a ripple in a ripple and a pond effect. So that healing extends out to the greater whole, because as each person starts to heal and as each person starts to get those insights and those understandings, it really does then spread out. So it becomes a complete global healing process.
I love that you brought that up, because I have a lot of people that come to me and they'll say, yeah, but how do I make a big difference in the world? How do I hit that global impact? I say, you take care of yourself.
Absolutely.
Because when you make these changes for yourself, you're going to affect the whole. And so what you really have to do is take care of yourself, in a sense. And you brought up with gratitude for the experiences. And I would add to that also forgiveness of different things, because I find, and I'm always working on myself with different things, and I've been doing a lot of work over the last few months in my own personal life, and it's amazing to me when I can stop and say, you know, I chose this experience, or perhaps in another lifetime I was sitting in the flip role, and so now I'm on this other end of it, and I find myself a lot of times going, I ask for forgiveness for what I've done. Yeah. And people think it's only related to this lifetime or this moment, and I've been doing a lot of going back to previous lifetimes and parallel lifetimes and saying, you know, forgive me for this and for putting you through this, and I am so grateful to have this awareness now. And what I find for me is that it brings me to a place of acceptance.
Yep.
And when I come to acceptance, these things don't bother me.
Yeah.
You know, they don't There's still maybe some challenges there to get past, but they don't stop me and they don't block me and they don't bother me because, as you say, I've taken responsibility. I've accepted that this is something I chose, that I agreed to participate in. And that's a huge, huge key, I think.
Absolutely. And I think that a lot of people, and I see this even in my work, where the idea of forgiveness is really important. And I think that people struggle with it sometimes, particularly when they experience somebody doing something very hurtful to them. And time again, this can be whether it's parents, whether it's people in previous lives. So, you know, even in situations where people have been brutally murdered, tortured, you know, quite intense things that have gone on. And what I will always do is get them to see the soul contract that was set up between them and get them to explore just how many lifetimes this pattern has been going on for. And, of course, when they discover that it's been going backwards and forwards, so if it was a power struggle, sometimes they were in power, sometimes it was the other person. So, again, they start to see, as you said quite rightly, the balance of sometimes being the victim or being the perpetrator. But also, what I get them to do is I get them to really see into the heart of this person that they've been interacting with. And I get them to see the wounded inner child that is inside each person. So I get them to go back to the childhood of this person that in that lifetime was challenging them and to see what it was that happened to them and to see what they needed as a lost, vulnerable child. And it's so powerful because no matter what anger or no matter what bitterness they may be holding towards the adult that hurt them, when they see this lost, vulnerable, unloved, neglected child that inevitably that this person was in order for them to be doing these bad things later in life, you know, they melt. And when I say to them, well, what does this child need? And they say, well, they need to be loved. So they then open their heart and send love to this person who had challenged them at a soul level. And then, of course, I say to them, okay, so if that child had been loved, if they had been valued, if they had felt as though they, you know, they were supported in the world, how do you think they'd have grown up differently? And how do you think their interaction with you would have been different in that lifetime or in that situation had they felt loved? And it's always, the message is always, well, they would have been supportive, they would have been cooperative, they, you know, they wouldn't have been in fear, they would have been able to honour me and themselves. And that aha moment, that kind of penny drop moment, that they recognise that, okay, so as this grown-up person, it wasn't really their fault. They were operating from a deep programming level that was deeply embedded before they had an opportunity to verify whether it was right or wrong. And then that understanding allows them to forgive. Because at that point, when they recognize, okay, you know, you weren't doing this because you were a bad person, you were doing it because there was bad programming or you know, the fact that something had happened to you. And that's such a release. You know, when that real insight, the real aha, I get it now. Now I know why you did that. I still don't like it. I still don't have to accept it. I still don't have to, you know, condone that behavior. But I can forgive you now because I get it. And that lets them and the other person off the hook. You know, it releases the guilt. It releases the suffering. And it brings people back to a place of balance. And it brings people back to a place where they can also accept and forgive themselves and start to operate on that level of unconditional love, you know, where we can love somebody. And that's what unconditional love means to me, that we can accept their failings, we can accept that they make mistakes, but we love the essence, we love the truth of who they really are. We don't have to like them necessarily, we don't have to like their behaviours, but we can love the soul that they are. And that for me is one of the most powerful things of anything that we can do.
I so much agree with that, and I actually use one of those examples in my books
right
about Yes, you can. I can literally say I can still love that person who is a murderer or whatever, because there's so many other pieces there. It doesn't mean I condone the acts. It doesn't mean I agree with what they did, but they are a person, and they do need love, and it is that inner child. Even, I think, going back to maybe a previous lifetime,
yeah,
or something, that inner child has been hurt, or it's coming through saying, you hurt me here, and I'm,
yeah,
responding this way now, here.
Yeah.
You do some interesting work that is called spirit release therapy.
Yeah.
Share with us a little bit of what that is about.
Yeah, again, I mean, this is a whole other layer that I find is becoming more and more common, more and more prevalent. And it's the fact that many of us, as we're going around in our kind of day-to-day lives, are interacting with and finding that we are linked to or connected to, I guess for a simple term, we would call them spirits, energies. Some people might even call them ghosts. So souls that, or fragments of soul energy, that for one reason or another, when the lifetime came to an end, didn't go back to the light. And it may be that they were confused at the point of death. It may be that there was unfinished business, so they didn't want to return. It may be they were concerned about loved ones. And these souls get trapped on the earth plane. And a lot of times they will be wounded, particularly if they did die with confusion or fear or loss. So they're vibrating at a sort of fairly low frequency, and they can't get back to the light. There's no way for them to get back on their own. So what they do is they look for a safe haven. They look for a space that is going to be a temporary shelter or a home for them. And when somebody comes by who vibrates, even if it's just at that particular moment in time, on that same frequency, whether it's fear or whether it's anxiety or loss or whatever it is, when somebody has what I call a wound, which will generate this varying different frequency, then these spirits, these entities, these souls, will actually attach themselves to that person's energy field. I describe it as being a little bit like Velcro, that the energy attachment can actually hold onto, they can stick onto. And they may just be around on the periphery of the energy field, but they can often be quite draining, even though they're not necessarily bad or trying to do anything hurtful, but they can just be a drain on a person. And sometimes they can also have quite a negative influence, because they can amplify the feelings that a person's having. So they can actually draw in. So we know about the law of attraction, that we you know, bring into us, you know, the events and the people and the situations that resonate with what's going on inside of us. So if we're carrying this sort of denser energy, then that has an impact on our vibration. That has an impact on what we start to experience. And, you know, throughout the centuries, there have been many people that have been aware of this, and even the Catholic Church. So, and in not quite such a friendly way, you know, these exorcisms that were done, where these big rituals where these spirits were banished and, literally sent screaming out of somebody, which, you know, I look back now and think, well, that's not necessarily the most loving or compassionate way of doing it. So thankfully, the work has evolved a little bit. Yeah. And so it's one of the most moving and often one of the most beautiful parts of the work that I do, because when somebody's in hypnosis, I can actually communicate with these beings. And I can actually speak to them. They use the vocal cords of the host, the person whose energy field that they're in. And lost souls that are stuck. And often they're really afraid. They're really frightened and they don't know where to go or what to do. And I'm able to reunite them with their soul family. I'm able to reunite them with their loved ones and show them, guide them safely back to the light. And it's so powerful. I mean, I did a session with somebody yesterday, and there were two energy attachments, and she was somebody that had struggled with relationships and had quite often ended up in situations where her relationships ended up being quite abusive, and it took a lot for her to stand up to her, for herself and to be able to move away. And she's been doing a lot of work on herself over the years, and of course it's, you know, we clear layer upon layer, and as we clear those layers we get to the deeper issues. And when we did the work, it transpired that she'd been carrying for many, many years these two energies. One was a young girl who was 17 who had been attacked and had been killed and who was in fear. And another one was a much older woman who had had a cycle of being really sort of, you know, abused and had really suffered in relationships. And they'd seen something familiar in her energy field. There was the same fear, there was the same wound. And because she was very kind and very gentle, they had seen this as a really safe place for them to stay. And of course, what was happening was that they were amplifying her fears, and they were almost generating, again, it almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, because the fear of, you know, I don't want to be abused, I don't want to be abused, I don't want to experience that. Brain doesn't quantify, you know, universe doesn't quantify the negative. So that's what kept happening. And she'd really got to the point where she'd decided, you know, enough is enough. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm done with this cycle, this pattern. So she really wanted to dig in deep and find out what was causing it. And nothing surprised her more than the discovery of these two women. And I was able to reconnect these women with their soul families, because they'd never really experienced what it was like to be loved. And so by bringing them in and actually in that space calling in the members of their soul family to reunite with them, you know, it's really powerful. And both my client was crying and they were crying, and it was this really joyful release. And of course, sometimes even, you know, they want to protect the host. You know, the older woman said, I'm here to toughen her up. She's not strong enough. And so I'm here to make sure that she's protected. And I said, well, that's all well and good, but that's not your job. You know, she's got to do this for herself, and you're actually depriving her of stepping into her own strength by trying to do this for her. And again, there was this real penny drop moment where this spirit just said to me, wow, I hadn't thought of that. And I said, well, can you see now that it's really important that you leave? You know, you've got to give her the opportunity to do this for herself. This is her soul's journey. And you know, that was the key to getting this spirit to leave. So she very gladly went off, and, you know, the energy, it's tangible. You feel the energy lifting and feel it going. And once the wound is then healed, we then went on and did a past life session where we found out where this had come from. And once you heal the wound within the person, then there's no Velcro anymore. So these attachments have nothing to stick onto. So they may be floating around, and they may sort of, you know, visit the energy field, but they can't stick. They can't stay. So, you know, less likelihood of actually bringing these energies with us. But research is showing now, and many doctors are starting to realize that many people that are suffering from mental illnesses, multiple personalities, you know, many psychoses, you know, that sometimes it will be a chemical imbalance in the brain, but sometimes it's that these people are picked up and they're carrying, you know, multiple or very damaged spirit attachments. And once they're cleared, oftentimes these people return back to absolute normal life.
Well, and I think that, you know, and when I've delved into this a little bit on other shows, in the sense that a lot of the people with these so-called diagnoses are highly sensitive people to start with.
Yeah, yeah.
And so if they get an attachment, they're highly influenced by that attachment. Now, you've delved into a whole area here that we haven't talked hardly ever, I think, on the show, if ever on the show, which is that of attachments. And
yeah.
I can just feel a whole bunch of people out there listening going, oh my gosh, do I have a whole bunch of attachments on me? And is this why this isn't working? And, you know, how do I know that I have these attachments on there? So you mentioned drain. If we have a high drain of energy, now that probably has to be separated out, whether that's an ongoing drain versus, say, right now when we have a temporary drain for a week or two because of planetary influence and we have energy upgrades ever going on. How does somebody really figure out whether there's an attachment that needs to be dealt with?
Well, sometimes people will find that they, it's almost they have thoughts that don't really feel like theirs. So they may have irrational sort of emotions that come up that they think, oh, that's strange. Why am I reacting in such a strong way to this? Sometimes they have habits that are unusual that kick in. So that they may be craving things that they didn't crave before. It's the draining feels like an absolute tiredness. It feels like it's a tiredness beyond the normal tiredness from not having a good night's sleep. You know, it's a kind of constant feeling, really, really drained. And I'm pretty sure if we did lots of research, you know, people that experience things like ME and, you know, where they feel like they have no energy whatsoever to function. You know, I'm sure if we did some research, we would find that there were links to this. The other thing that people can do is to they can check with a pendulum, which is something that I use quite a lot as a diagnostic tool. So, you know, tuning in and you know, asking yes or no from a pendulum and just checking, you know, is there something in my energy field that doesn't belong to me? And if they do get a yes, I mean, quite often the simplest way to do it is just to sit in a quiet space, visualize a circle of white light around them and just imagine that light is connecting them to the heavens. So it's almost as though they're opening up a portal of white light, and to give permission for any of these attachments to go home and to call in their loved ones. And let them know that it's safe, let them know that it's okay. And oftentimes that's all they need. They just need to know how to get back. They've become lost and trapped along the way. And sometimes I get people who are afraid. They fear that, you know, some of these entities or things that are around may be dark or negative or something to be scared of. You know, sometimes people come in and they say, oh, you know, I think I've got demons. And I always point out to people, you know, that all of this energy is just light. All of this energy, we all come from the same place, and there is nothing really to be afraid of, even ghosts. You know, and sometimes when I've been doing this work, you know, these entities appear and they're noisy and they're loud and they, you know, they roar. They try to look like they're or sound like they're scary. And I just send love right into the heart. I see the spark of light, the unconditional, you know, little spot or speck of light that's in all beings. And, you know, what usually happens is that the noisiest ones turn out to be the smallest ones. They're usually young children who were terrified. And so they thought that if they made themselves look big and scary or sound big and scary, that they would be safe. And there really isn't anything to be afraid of. That's the key thing with all of this, because these are just souls that are the same as us, and they just need to be loved. They need to acknowledge and remember who they are, which ultimately is a divine being, a spiritual being that was housed in a human body or who's now down on the earth plane and has kind of forgotten their origin. They've forgotten where it is that they belong. They've forgotten where they come from. And sometimes what happens with these entities is that they think that they may have done something wrong. So they haven't been able to forgive themselves if they made mistakes or they got things wrong. So they need to be forgiven as well. That's really key in all of this. You know, I often have to say to these spirits, look, there's no judgment in the spirit realm. So when you go home, you're not going to be punished. You're not going to be outcast. you will be welcomed home with open arms. And, you know, whatever you need to do to resolve or heal whatever happened can occur there. But while you're trapped here, then nothing gets finished or nothing gets resolved. And again, that's usually really, really freeing. I work quite a lot with the Ho'oponopono, the Hawaiian Huna process, which is all about forgiveness, and it's all about, I guess, taking personal responsibility for our stuff, but just telling these souls that they are forgiven and that they are loved, and thanking them for you know, the works that they've done, and then releasing them, letting them go, is usually more than enough.
And that letting go is so important, because sometimes people feel like, oh, it's cool to have this around, but it really isn't. We actually have had a guest, Tina Irwin, on, who specifically, that's her key focus, is helping spirits move on. Not in the sense of them being attached to somebody, but just in general. And, you know, has talked about some of those same things of calling in an angel to help those people that are inhabiting the space to move on. But I love that you're doing this with attachments to individuals. And I have somebody in my chat room that was asking, what about pain in the body or disorientation? Would those be signs of an attachment?
Sometimes, but not necessarily. You know, pain in the body is usually a signal that there is something that needs to be dealt with, that there's something that needs to be addressed. And you know, it may be something that's connected. It may not belong to the person. It might be from an attachment. But, no, pain is usually something else. Disorientations, again, all things are possible. I mean, if it's something that came on for no reason, there wasn't anything particularly that happened to them that led to this, then they might want to explore that. But it's usually you really feel, it's almost as though, you know, the energy is being sucked out of you and drained out of you. So it's a real sort of heavy fatigue that happens. Sometimes people get sort of, you know, tingling, or, you know, almost as though there's a sensation on the top of their head that's sort of almost tingly, that kind of feels as though there's something there, but you can't quite put your finger on it. I mean, the best thing to do, if somebody's not sure, as I said, either check with a pendulum or find somebody that they can work with who can put them into, because as I said, once you're in hypnosis, then it's possible to find them, to communicate with them, and to help them to move on.
And I think that is an important thing. I think that some of this feeling that you're talking about is very similar to being around somebody who's maybe operating at a lower vibration or something than you, and you walk away from that interaction just totally drained.
Yeah.
And so I think it's similar than that, other than the drain doesn't tend to go away.
Yeah, absolutely. And even thought forms, you know, when we are around negative people, that, you know, that negativity has an energy of its own. And so it's really important for people to do a kind of energetic cleanse when they've been around that, or if they've been through a period of negativity of their own, you know, the sort of salt baths, or, you know, just go out and be in nature and just visualize white light coming through and cleansing the system, because we have to, you know, I see my work as being like clutter clearing. And so when there are energies, or there are just things that we've accumulated, whether it's thoughts, beliefs, ideas, or energy, whatever it is, you know, we do need to do maintenance. We do need to go in there and clear out the cobwebs and the shadows. And that, to me, is the essence of what Inner Freedom's about. It's about doing that work. It's about going in there and spring cleaning what's going on behind the scenes.
And I think that people forget about that, because we're not always seeing what's happening on the inside. We look around ourselves in our house, and you can see a cobweb there, or you can see dust in the windowsill, or things like that. But we're not getting that in our face when it comes to our internal original self. And you bring up a good point that these attachments, they're drawn by similar things. They're relating, it seems to be more emotional and thought-based in its nature than, say, physical-based. And that's an interesting thing because, again, what's going to feed them, that's kind of like a candida in the body that keeps getting fed by sugar. If attachments are there and you continue to be negative and you continue to increase your fears, they're going to feed on that. You're giving them nourishment around.
Yeah, they feed on it and they amplify it. So I know in the times when I've done this work and I've spoken to some of the energy attachments and they claim that they're negative and that they're dark and they say, I'm not going anywhere, I'm going to stay here. And I say, well, that's all well and good, but I'm going to keep sending you love, and this is a really good person that you're in their energy field. And how much love can you stand? And they almost get irritated and then want to leave. So, sometimes I have a very playful way of dealing with them because I say, I'm just going to stay here and I'm just going to keep sending you love until eventually you kind of melt them down and then they're ready to go. So, I do work with clearing sort of land and clearing properties and, there are battle sites, Lord knows, in some of the places that I've been around the world, particularly, there's been some quite intense stuff that went on in Egypt. But always it's the same thing. Ultimately, it just comes down to that these are just, that they are ultimately the same as us at the end of the day, and they are beings of light who've just got lost along the way, and they just need permission to go home. That's all it is.
And, you talk about some of those that are very resistant to the love, and they're saying, I don't want the love. Well, it's just like people around us that say, don't love me, don't hug me, don't show me that attention because it opens up a whole new space of vulnerability for them and responsibility and various things like that. And yet inside, that's exactly what they're wanting more than anything. And why are they attaching? They're attaching to get love. I think that kind of ties theme back around, or what you were talking about, that it comes back to the inner child of that attachment is longing to be loved. And how many people do we know in our lives that say, I don't want to be loved, I don't need that, it doesn't make any difference, but then they'll turn around and they'll say, nobody loves me.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I've found from doing this work, which, and I've been doing this for many, many years now, and it still blows my mind, is that when you do the work in the spirit realms, so we do it in the session, and, I did some work recently with a guy who his ex-partner was clearly very angry and upset with him because their relationship had broken up and he'd left, and she was using their daughter as a means of punishing him for going. So she was banning, he'd been banned from visiting, and he was only allowed to see her for an hour a week, and it was all monitored. It was at a centre and there was somebody else there, because she'd accused him of doing all sorts of terrible things and neglecting the child, which he clearly hadn't done. And he was, he was heartbroken because he adored his daughter. But he did this work in the spirit realms. He went and found a past life where the two of them had been battling. He then realized that when he spoke to her at the soul level that they had been playing this dynamic out with one another for many, many lifetimes, power struggle where, they'd taken it in turns to be the one to sort of usurp the other, and that this was just part of a long, long cycle. So they recognized that, the agreement that they'd made was that they would push each other to the limits and test each other. And they realized that they had ticked the box now. They'd done it. In lifetime after lifetime, they had achieved this. So he had permission to change the contract to no longer have to run that program. So instead of them testing each other or challenging each other, he rewrote the contract and said, I give myself permission to experience support, to experience unconditional love, and to experience acceptance. And the other, you know, this soul in the life was so pleased and so relieved that this had changed. So it was very healing on the spiritual plane. But after the session, he said, well, what difference is this going to make in my real life? And I said, well, you're just going to have to wait and see, because there are no guarantees, but let's just see how this unfolds. Anyway, I got a call from him a week later. He was absolutely blown away. He had gone to court, and this was the court decision about what access he was going to have with his daughter. And bear in mind, he'd had no conversation with her. There had been no email exchanges, nothing, only this healing work that he'd done. And when he arrived, he found out that she'd dropped all the charges. And yeah. They were giving him unlimited access to his daughter. And a few days later, I got a video message from his little girl, and because they were out for the day. And it's just mind-blowing.
It really is, and we don't realize how much this shifts, and this is why it's so fascinating to work with past lives and future lives and these different aspects with it. And I know contracts are a big thing where we have a lot of karmic agreements or contracts mm-hmm. that have been set up lifetime after lifetime, and they were in place to help us in that previous lifetime, for example, but they're not needed anymore. It's like somebody who was a monk, they needed to write a contract, for example, to be without money in order to fulfill their obligations and their responsibilities and what they were living through. So they wrote that to not have that so it didn't interfere with their processes. Well, now they come into this life and they're like, why can't I make any money? Because they've still got this contract running from when they were a monk, for example. These are big things. Lorraine, I know there's got to be people out there, and they're sitting there going, wow, she's so knowledgeable, and she's so insightful, and she's definitely got a lot of pieces that she brings together. But I probably don't live where she is. Can I still work with you? Can you do Skype sessions or something with people?
I can do Skype sessions, and I'm always happy if people have questions. If they want to email me, there's quite a lot of resources on my website, but also the book helps people, because it's full of stories about people's experiences and the sort of transformations that have happened in their lives as a result of doing this work. So even that is you know, provides a lot of aha moments for people, because they see similarities. And there are also exercises that they can do, very simple ones that they can do that starts to bring up to the surface more knowledge, more information about who they are, and helps them to identify the areas that need to be worked on. And then on the CDs that I've created, there are a lot of processes that, again, will help people to start clearing away some of that sort of surface clutter so that they get to the deeper parts. But yes, I am available on Skype, and I do travel, and I have been doing a fair few trips to the US, so there is a distinct possibility that I will be, I've certainly been in California quite a bit recently, but I'm hoping to get to New York at some point soon as well. So if people wanted to sign up for my newsletter, then I can let them know where I'm going to be, and they can find me that way.
And that's good to know that you do make it out to the States once in a while. And I think it is important for people to know that, indeed, they do have options for working with you. Definitely, I encourage people to check out what you do have in place and what is there. I noticed on your website, too, that you do retreats. Now, one of those was in Greece, and that's already over with. But there's another one coming up in November that's in Egypt.
Yes.
Do you want to share about that?
Yes. It's in Egypt, but which I know sometimes people are a bit afraid that there is stuff going on in Egypt, but this is out by the Red Sea, and it's an area that is extraordinarily beautiful. It's very high energy. It's out, you know, we're not that far away from the Sinai Desert, and it's a very remote base, so there is it's very much about going back to nature. And just kind of being with the elements. So it's ocean, mountains, desert. And it really allows people to leave behind all the worldly trappings and really start to explore and bring to the surface all of these shadows. So it's a fairly intensive journey through all of those stages. So we do the work with the inner child, with the ancestors, with past lives, with clearing away the sort of negative beliefs and patterns, and then sort of culminating in people starting to redesign their future, to think about the when they know the truth of who they really are, you know, why they're here, what they've come to create. So starting to plan for that. And again, it's very powerful when, especially when you're with like-minded people who are all committed to the journey. And of course, incredible synchronicities come up, you know, when people arrive and they see these links with these people that, you know, maybe from all different parts of the world, but somehow it's always the right people that arrive in these places. We started, there was another one in Turkey, and there's a possibility, I'm exploring at the moment, there's a possibility of one in Thailand as well. So, because I just think that if we, when we do this work, when we are surrounded in, you know, beautiful surroundings, but it's just, we're working with the nature elements rather than our busy, technology-led, you know, chaotic lives, it's so much harder to get access to this information and to do the work. So, yeah, beautiful locations are really important.
You know, I have to agree with that. I just finished doing a retreat 2 weeks ago, a full-week retreat, and it is very, very key, I think, to be in nature. And I know myself, I've had people in settings that they thought, well, that's not really my settings. I'm really more of a beach person as opposed to trees and things like that. But ironically, where they were most resistant,
yes.
The settings they were most resistant on, is where they got some of their biggest breakthroughs.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, absolutely.
I wholeheartedly agree. I think nature's such a powerful place, and I think doing the retreats. Now, how long are your retreats when people do those?
Generally a week, although what I do with the Egypt one is that there's an extension if people want to stay on for a few days, and we go and climb Mount Sinai, and it's an overnight climb, and you awaken, we awaken at or arise at dawn, on the top of the mountain, and then climb down in the morning and go into St. Catherine's Monastery, which is also a very powerful energy site. So it's generally 7 days, but with people can stay for 10 days if they wanted to do that extra bit.
Very nice. Very, very nice to do. And I was thinking, you know, we got into some wonderful things tonight, but I'm thinking... We'll have so much more of your work to cover here, too.
I know,
And I'm thinking we may just have to bring you back on again and have you talk about the Ho'oponopono work and the future lives work, because I think that both of those are really quite interesting as well, and I know that they're both very powerful explorations of the self and openings of the self as well. Lorraine, remind us also, again, your website.
Yes, it's www.innerjourneys, and that's spelled J-O-U-R-N-E-Y-S, www.ivyhealing.co.uk.
Okay. And from there, people can obviously, they can sign up for your email list. They can pick up your products. And I've also put your products on, or at least part of them, on my guest product page on my website.
Wonderful.
So that's
an
option for people for connecting with that.
Yeah.
But you've got everything on there. You've got, you know, information about yourself and your events and your services and your blog post and so much for people to go and explore.
Yes, and there's also on the media page, there's a couple of free recordings on there so people can go in and explore a positive past life for themselves. So it doesn't require any therapy. They just go back to a lifetime where they had a skill or a talent. And I always love to hear from people if they do go in and listen to that to find out what they uncovered, what they learned. And it's always fascinating for me.
I'm going to have to go in and check that out. I've done a lot of past life work, and I've taken people through past lives, and I naturally can get myself there.
Right.
But
yeah.
It's so nice to sit back and receive it and let somebody else take you through it. And to have that on there, I think that that's a really great
Absolutely.
Gift for people to explore.
Yeah, and the recordings they're on Amazon now on MP3s, so people can download the tracks individually for a very nominal fee so that they can get the benefit, the healing from them.
Very nice, very nice. And I just want to remind people we've been talking with Lorraine Flaherty tonight, and if you've missed any part of the show, you definitely want to go back, catch it in the archives. Lorraine, it has been such a pleasure to have you on here and to have you sharing your work and being with us tonight and opening us to some of these different aspects that you're doing with energy attachments and and these different little pieces, because I wasn't expecting to go there tonight, but it was exactly where we needed to go with your spirit release therapy and looking at this inner child work and this ancestral work. And I feel like this is so important because, as you said, more and more people are awakening and they're becoming aware of how these pieces are influencing their lives and how much we need to know this knowledge so that we can create that inner freedom, so that we can go ahead and move forward and maximize what we're here to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it's a really important time at the moment, and I think people are really, you know, they are waking up, and it's an exciting time. I think it's a great time to be alive.
That it is. Thank you very, very much for your time. I so appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
And again, tonight we've been talking with Lorraine Flaherty. If you missed any part of the show, do go back and catch it in the archives, because it has been an amazing discussion with energy attachments and inner child work and so many wonderful pieces that she brought to the table. And again, you can check out her website, www.innerjourneys, that's with an S on the end of it, .co.uk. And again, she's got a lot of great stuff on there that you can explore, a lot of things that you can go in and try and sample, and she can work with you by Skype, and she's got amazing events coming up like Egypt in November, so lots of things to check out there. Next week I will have Claudia Davis on our show, and we're going to be looking at her work with angels and karma clearing. And that's really some fascinating work there as well. And my books on relationships have been released. You can find the links to check those out and purchase them on my website, JessieAnnNicholsGeorge1.com. And they're designed to help you activate the perfect relationship for you, to learn how to find, develop, and maintain your perfect relationship, and to understand what your partner is thinking, feeling, needing, and how to communicate in ways that's going to strengthen your relationship. I've also released several events for 2014. You can check those out at JessieAnnNicholsGeorge.eventbrite.com, and that would be For example, the weekend retreats, which I'm running throughout the year. The last one was just 2 weeks ago. We have another one coming up the first weekend in August will be the next one. There is a possibility we might have a little location change, so that might you might want to watch for that. It may lead the location to be closer to where you are. And in addition, I'm now offering things like affiliate opportunities. You can check those out. July special deal, what I've got going on for the month of July, you can actually take advantage of doing free courses that I have put together. And those would be a series on chakras, a series on compassion, a series on harmony. And you can find out more about those free courses on my homepage, on my website, JessieAnnNicholsGeorge1.com. I also want to remind you we've got several shows here on Main Street Universe throughout the week. Sunday nights we have Darren Bouquet, who's a reader at Madame Laveau in New Orleans, doing spiritual insights. Monday nights is Randy Goldberg doing Vedic astrology. Tuesday, Susan Weed, who shares her expertise in herbs and natural plants. Really a great show, short, sweet, but packed full of information. Wednesday nights, we have Daniel, Janice, and Brett on our flagship show called Main Street Universe, and they delve into guests and topics and just a whole variety of things there. Thursdays, we have Queen Mother Amaku doing Wise Woman Renegade right now. Fridays, oftentimes, Kevin Baird is working with Walking on the Sidewalk, his Horizon Oracle's Journeys deck, and that's a deck he created. You can learn more about it at templeofgaia.com. And, of course, Friday nights is Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. This is Jessie Ann Nichols George. Thank you so much for being here tonight. And, again, thank you to all of our listeners, not only on Blog Talk Radio, but those that are streaming live on PEN, which is known as Pair Encounters Network, StreamFinder, and TalkStream Live, as well as those catching our podcast at iTunes, TuneIn.com, and those catching the YouTube version of our show. I look forward to seeing you back here next week as we delve more into activating compassion. Don't forget, if you've enjoyed my show this evening, share it with others. It will be available at the same link in our archives. You can also catch that link on my webpage, or they can catch any of the podcast areas as well. I'm going to leave you tonight with the song Yearning For, also known as Over and Over by Shemshai. Thank you so much, and I look forward to seeing you again next week right here on Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. May you enjoy the rest of your weekend, and have an amazing week.
And if I could see what makes me blind, I would soar to the edge of my mind. And to touch what seems unreal, just to show you the way that I feel. And we are in time with time, one with season of change inside. And we are in tune with the tune, caught in a balance of sun and moon. Oh, deep inside, the light within, shining to show you it's here to begin. When all I have is all I need, I will soar to the edge of eternity. And we see it eye to eye, one within love to be for the divine. And we're walking hand in hand, caught in the balance of God and man. Over and over, life is your lover, learning to walk just a little bit slower. Whispering secrets, I bet you can't keep it. No turning back now, this time we'll reveal it. Once you are another, all will discover the essence within the most beautiful lover. Time is still turning, the love is still burning. Deep in your spirit, your heart still yearning for.
be received. And we see it eye to eye, one within love before the divine. And we're walking hand in hand, caught in the balance of God and man. And we are in time with time, one with the season of change in time. And we are in tune with the tune of life in the circle and love in turning back now, this time we reveal it. One to another, all will discover the essence within the most beautiful lover. Time is still turning, the love is still burning. Deep in your spirit, your heart is still yearning for. Over and over, life is yours.